7. Well, special election time. Many people are upset about that. One of the mantras out there is we're spending all of this money on a special election. How can we do that with the state budget problems and everything? Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. This will be your chance to weigh in on these propositions. There's 73, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 80. We will probably devote most of our attention this show to 73, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Narrowing it down even further, may even only talk about 73, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I consider those to be the most important. The medical prescription initiatives on the ballot, I'm kind of against both of them. So this will probably be the last shot on a Saturday special. You get to weigh in on these initiatives. We'll go through them one by one. And we can talk about any of them. If we get more interest in one over the other, so be it. I found this special election to be extremely fascinating and interesting. You know, the Sentinel every year comes out, every time we have an election, comes out with their opinion. And they had a comment the other day. They're advocating Proposition 76. The third paragraph in their thing, they say, our first piece of advice to voters, don't pay any attention to the television commercials that you see. You really don't like to sling, we really don't like to sling this overused phrase around, but here it is. They're lying. And I've been fascinated because, watching the commercials on television regarding the measures, because for the most part, I don't think that I ever remember a year in my life where I've seen more of they are lying, or that's just not true, or they just make it up, than this year's television commercials promoting or against, for the most part, many of the ballot initiatives. So we'll talk about that. We'll look at that a little bit. And I'm fascinated. I've had the privilege or bad luck, if you wish to say it that way, to go to a lot of initiative forums. My wife has been asked to speak or be the proponent of 73, 4, 5, 6, 7 on most of them, and 8, because it's very hard in this progressive community, for the most part, to get conservatives to go out there and go into the lion's den and face the opposition, but she has been willing to do so. So I'm pretty acquainted with most of the arguments against Propositions 73, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And I've read pretty much all of them, including their entire text. I've read some of them a little bit more thoroughly, but I certainly have scanned the text of all of them. And what we're being told on the commercials is not, for the most part, what they say. So this will be interesting. We'll see what happens. Call me if you have any comments or opinions. So let's get into it. The first one on the ballot is Proposition 73. And it is called the waiting period and parental notification before termination of minor's pregnancy initiative. It is a constitutional amendment. So one of the things that comes up about constitutional amendments is that even though there are constitutional amendment initiatives on the ballot, they only require a majority vote in this particular case. The only requirement that you requires more is to get it on the ballot. I'm sorry, excuse me. You need more signatures to get it on the ballot than if the initiative was not a constitutional amendment. And in this amendment, it basically provides for parental notification of a pending abortion for a teen. It doesn't prohibit the abortion of a teen. Literally, it says in the beginning, it amends the California Constitution prohibiting abortion of unemancipated minors until 48 hours after a physician notifies parents or parents' legal guardian, except in medical emergencies or with a parental waiver. This is really an interesting one. It's a really fascinating one. The heated arguments that come up about this one, when you read the text of the measure, is it defines, it has some definitions in there. One of the definitions in particular really has the opponents upset about this one, in that it says abortion means the use of any means to terminate the pregnancy of an unemancipated minor female known to be pregnant with knowledge that the termination with those means will be with reasonable likelihood cause the death of an unborn child, a child conceived but not yet born. So that's a big fear. Planned Parenthood typically is the one that argues against this one. And they say, well, we don't like that. This is the beginning of the end of Roe versus Wade because it redefines a pregnancy as a young lady carrying around an unborn fetus instead of an unborn child. And that's the slippery downhill slope. The other argument about it is that it really does nothing to reduce pregnancies or abortions because young ladies, underage young ladies, actually happen to leave town to go get their abortions. They leave the state to go get their abortions. And so you've done nothing but shift where the abortion occurs from this state to another state. In our particular case, it would be some place like Oregon or Utah, unless you figure that a minor is really able to travel farther than that. Now, I find this argument a little bit interesting and hard to swallow because if you can't... Let me say one other thing, is it doesn't require, doesn't stop an abortion. What it literally says is parents must be notified, okay? Doesn't stop the abortion, and in special cases where a child doesn't think that they can go to their parents, it does provide for them to, in fact, go and get a waiver from the court. Now, the argument against this is you've got a scared young teenager, and if they're pregnant, they don't want to go tell their parents, which I think is kind of interesting anyway, because most kids don't want to tell their parents anything that they've done that their parents don't want. Okay? Part of growing up is taking responsibility for your actions in life, and if you so happen to get pregnant, then, you know, that just is the case. I think every parent has a right to know if, in fact, their child is pregnant. Well, maybe they don't have a right to know if they're pregnant, but if she doesn't get it aborted, they will know at some point in time. That is parental notification, by the way, is a young lady starts to swell with pregnancy. And if they need to get a waiver because they're worried that their parent will take advantage of them or it's the baby is a result of incest or something, I think it's a good thing because with that incest, it needs to be reported to the authorities. We need to stop this incest and parental abuse. So, that certainly is the first thing on the ballot. I think that it's a good thing. You know, children can't get given medication at school. They can't undergo any other medical procedure without parental consent. But in this case, we find that people say that they should, the opponents of Proposition 73, want to be able to allow young ladies, any teenager, anyone under the age of consent, anyone under the age of 18, to be able to get an abortion without their parents having the right to know. So I would be interested to see what you have to say about that. Call me 479-1080, 477-1340. The summary of the legislative analyst estimates of the net state and local government fiscal impact is they don't know. Potential unknown net costs of several million dollars annually for health and social programs, the courts and state administration combined. We really don't know. It's interesting, at one of the forums I was at, the question was raised, how big a problem is this? How many young ladies out there that require abortions don't ultimately notify their parents? And no one really knew what the answer to that thing is. So I don't know how passionate you are about 73. I would definitely support it. I think every parent has a right to know if their child is going to have an abortion. One of the things I find interesting that never comes up in the discussion on the side of those that are opposed to Proposition 73 is what are the consequences of a young lady that has an abortion if there are complications afterwards, either physical or psychological, and especially if the parents don't know. What kind of position does that put the parents in to have their child start, if they start acting strange? Because, you know, I can't help but believe that abortion isn't quite a bit of a psychological trauma. I certainly, as a man, will never be faced by that. But I do know I have met women that have had abortions for whom this is a problem. It bothers them later in life. And I want to know if someone has an answer to that question. So anyway, the opponents of that are worried about Proposition 73, because what they say is it puts a young lady's life at risk. There are many of these young ladies that don't want to tell their parents or are afraid to tell their parents. Clearly, I can understand this. Even though I'm 58, I was a young man once, and for most of you out there that were young at one particular point in time, the fact of the matter is it was always a fear if you're trying to go out there and get sexually active, which is just the way of life. You know, in my day and age, if you're a young man, the fear was that call is, oh, I've missed my period. And in my day and age, if a young lady did get pregnant, they disappeared from society in one case, or in many cases, if you're 17, it was not unusual to hold young men accountable and have weddings so the baby would not be born out of wedlock. In fact, I think that that was kind of a good thing to tell you. Maybe not from the standpoint of the divorce rate, but in those days you did not get divorces, and it was something a young man had to think about and a young lady had to think about in terms of sexual activity. Today it's pretty easy to get an abortion. One last comment on that one, because we've got quite, I've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 to go through, is, one of the things that comes up with the people against this particular measure on the Planned Parenthood side is they talk about the fear the young lady has, the problems with going through the judicial system, being in a courtroom with a judge and everything. And what I don't understand is if they really care about a young lady that's pregnant and faced with these problems, has to confront this issue, is why can't they be available there to walk them through it? So, Proposition 73, quick summary. It requires parental notification before a young lady can go out and get an abortion. And if a young lady's too afraid to do that for a variety of reasons, because she could have been the victim of incest in the family, then there are provisions in there to have it heard in juvenile court and get a waiver on that. It does not prevent abortions for minors, and so be it. 479-1080, 477-1340. By the way, a term that's going around these days is Nix the Six. Nix the Six. N-I-X the Six. And that happens to be from most of the public employee unions. One of the things I think is pretty interesting about that is I haven't quite figured out where Proposition 73 fits into Stop Arnie. Because for the most part, most of the opposition raised to this special election and these propositions is people want to stop Arnie. In their minds, this is all about Arnold Schwarzenegger and they want to stop him. And I don't know quite where the parental notification part of that thing fits in. 479-1080, 477-1340. I was just thinking about this morning. I can see some of the others where they might come up with that, Nix the Six, but I don't quite know where the parental notification part comes in. Okay, we do have a caller on the phone. We're going to take calls as they come in, and I want to take this one right now because I've been talking about Proposition 73, Scott and Freedom. We're going to pick him up, because I'm going to move on to 74 next. And if you have anything to say on these things, now's the time to do it, because as we go on, the lines tend to light up and you may lose your seat. Scott, you're on the Saturday special. What do you have to say about 73?
Vernon, I have a scenario for you.
Here's
a homeless, unmarried, young woman. She has no money. So what would be the advice that Planned Parenthood, with its monopoly, the racketeering monopoly they have with the schools, what would Planned Parenthood advise this young woman? What do you think?
I think they'd run her right down for the abortion, or they might run her in the court, because I don't know. That's a very interesting question. If you can't find her family, I wonder if they would spend any time doing that.
Vernon?
Yes.
I'm just talking about the Mother Mary of Jesus.
Oh, yes.
Thank God they weren't around, huh? That's all I got to say. Oh, also, one thing that,
you set me up there, Scott. Good job.
A parent should know about their grandchild, you know?
Well, I think the parents have a right to know on these things, and I think, in my opinion, most of the arguments against parental notification are specious at best.
Well, they say that the young woman doesn't have the ability to make such an important decision on her own. Well, that's actually an argument for parental notification, to at least, you know there are opportunities, and as you say, take responsibility for your actions.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really bothered me about this as I've sat through these forums, Scott, is, in fact, part of growing up is taking responsibility for your actions. People make mistakes, and life is a tough business.
Science also includes psychology.
Well, that's the other one, as I said, is that gets left out, is what happens when a young lady all of a sudden is lethargic or comes home or unresponsive. You know, I cannot help but believe that an abortion...
You know, my ex, who would never have got an abortion herself, took her young sister to get one. And every year, her little sister says, oh, now he'd be 5 this year. You know, is that going to be for the rest of her life? You know, God, you know, I hope she can heal.
I do, too. I definitely, personally... recommend a yes vote on 73, and if there's anyone out there that opposes 73, we're ready to take your arguments and justifications and listen to them. 479-1080, 477-1340. Good point, Scott.
I'm with you, Vernon.
Well, thanks so much. Keep listening, and on this particular program, you always have the right to call back. I don't care if anyone calls back on additional propositions. What I will do if someone's called in and there are other calls, they'll be put at the end of the line, okay?
Fair enough.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Bless you. Bye.
Same to you. 479-1080, 477-1340. So I have no problem bouncing back and forth between propositions if people call in and they're moved to comment on Proposition 73. Later, we will talk about that based on what's going on. Okay. Given the fact we have a whole bunch of them, we need to move on now. It's 10:24. Actually, this would be a good time to bring up my wave cart and play a couple commercial spots real quick, because I usually try and do that at the beginning of the hour and inundate people with the commercials they're going to hear so that we can kind of have our own times to ourselves. So telephone number is 479-1080, 477-1340. We're going to be talking about Proposition 74 next when we come back, and that is a change in the permanent employment status for teachers.
This is Morgan Freeman, and I, like all of you, have been shocked and humbled by the damage and heartbreak in the Gulf Coast area. The American Red Cross is in action throughout the area, and they need your support to get food, shelter, counseling, and other assistance to where it is most needed. Help victims of Hurricane Katrina and thousands of other disasters across the country each year. Call 1-800-HELP now or visit redcross.org. Your donation provides hope, and hope is more powerful than a hurricane.
Brought to you by the American Red Cross, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hello, it's me. You know, your TV. What the heck is that VCR still doing on top of me? I mean, are we back in the 80s or something? VCR, it's embarrassing. When was the last time you actually taped something with that dinosaur anyway? Get rid of it. You know why? Because you can get a TiVo digital video recorder for only $49.99 after a $150 mail-in rebate. Hello, I'm talking the TiVo box beautifully perched right on top of me, your TV, for only $49.99. So buy TiVo. You know the one with the cute little TiVo guy on the box? I love him.
Get TiVo, the first, best, and easiest to use digital video recorder for only $49.99 after rebate and service activation. TiVo automatically finds and records your favorite shows. No tapes, no timers, no worries. TiVo boxes are available at Best Buy and Circuit City for our lowest price ever. Only $49.99 after mail-in rebate plus our low monthly service fee. A $150 savings.
So get TiVo already. And please, ixnay on the Leave It to Beaver reruns.
Offer ends November 27, 2005. 1 year TiVo service commitment required. Restrictions apply. See TiVo.com for details.
Okay, 26 past the hour. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube. Today is an initiative forum day. We're talking and discussing about the ballot initiatives on the special election to be held a week from Tuesday on November 8th, 2005. We just got done or are close to wrapping up on Prop 73, parental notification. I have Ed on the phone, and since he called in prior to going into 74, we'll see if that's what he wants to talk about. Good morning, Ed.
Yeah, I heard. I'm not, since I don't have a dog in the fight, really, I'm not too concerned with this, but other than I wanted to give somebody, I think it's a Trojan horse because of the, and you mentioned it earlier in your discussion, that the definition is definitely a Trojan horse. Secondly, it really shouldn't be necessary. Of course, you know, this, if it was a perfect world, the girl involved would have perfect relationships with her parents, and they would be her biggest supporters, and they would come to the decision on a joint basis. But it's not a perfect world, and I think one of the persons I've heard against this was the parents that their daughter died because she snuck off and got an abortion, and I guess she got a back alley version and died, you know, in the process.
You know, let me add. Go ahead.
And, you know, you can pass all this legislation. We've got drug laws and all this other stuff. But the fact is that if a kid wants to go out and get an abortion and not let her parents know, she can do it. She can save up her money. You know, cost of flying across country to some state that you can get an abortion in is not too terribly expensive. And, you know, she can be out and back. And say she's going on a trip with her friends or something like that. She can give herself some kind of cover. But she can go out and back and get it done. So it basically won't really change things too much. I mean, a few people, the people it's going to affect are the poor people who don't have the wherewithal to go out and do this. And probably the people without the wherewithal who's to say what's going on with the thing.
Well, Ed, you know, that's interesting you brought that up, because I've grappled with that. Clearly, the first thing about the back alley abortion you mentioned is that happened under a law where there's no parental notification required in the first place. So whether the law is in place or not, that's not going to affect people that's not going to affect young ladies that are just going to ignore the law. The second thing I found is kind of interesting personally. You said it's not that hard to get money to go get an airline flight to go someplace. I would say that that probability applies more the old closer you are to the age of 18, but less to you the closer you are to the ages, let's say like 13 and 14. Because, you know, one of the arguments against this is how hard it is to get to the courts. In my opinion, is if it's hard to get to a court in your county. What makes it easier to get out of state for a day or so to get your abortion if you're 13 or 14? Any comments?
Well, the big thing would be just anonymity.
Are you just going to take off at 8 in the morning, go from Los Angeles to Nevada, let's say, where it's now legal?
You'd pre-arrange it. You don't have it pre-arranged. You could get a gambler special, hell, get on a bus going up to Reno. I'm sure that Reno.
How much would that cost, do you think?
I don't know. They might even pay it to
get the bus. Well, the gambler special wouldn't probably take you if you're 13 or 14.
I don't know. But you can get on some type of weekend. I have, of course, not being pregnant and researched this, I really don't know. But if I were trying to put myself into the place of a young lady that's, you know, in a family way and doesn't really want to be there, that I would, you know, could do some research and find a fairly inexpensive way to get myself to some place. If that was my what I wanted to do.
Well,
the biggest thing on this is I think that we ought to just let females vote on this and the males have nothing to do with this.
Well, you know, we'll do that when we change the voting, the way that we're allowed to vote, Ed. That's just one of the ways it is. I appreciate your weighing in on the other side of it, albeit you did it very tepidly, because you said you kind of don't have a dog in this fight. I appreciate you calling.
Well, I think to reiterate, the two big points is that, you know, they masquerade the thing as parental consent, and yet they stick that Trojan horse in there, which I object to highly, and that's my biggest objection.
Well.
And secondly is that you put yourself into the place of one of these females. You know, why you have to ask yourself the question, why doesn't she want to tell her parents? And you know, whatever rules we make will not change the reason why she's in that, you know, in that particular position.
Well, that's true. I appreciate your.
I don't think changing, you know, passing this law, it might have, you know, change it, you know, maybe probably old 80-20. 80% of them will still keep going on, so 20% will have the effect.
Well, you know, I wish the main argument against it was that it was unnecessary because the number of teen abortions and pregnancies was so low
exactly.
We didn't need it, huh?
If we had good sex education so that people, you know, when you get good sex education, your pregnancy rate drops down. So.
Well, you know, Ed, I'm 58. When I was in high school, I graduated in 65, and I think the sex education was worse then, and not that there weren't teenage pregnancies. But I'm willing to bet you if I went back in the statistics, there were fewer teenage pregnancies, albeit the abortions that were conducted, as they would say, were back alley ones.
You have to live with the times. I think that it is proven, though, that when you get good, you know, the better the sex education, the lower the pregnancy rate.
I have to check that.
This just say no stuff, you know, is proved it doesn't work.
Well, you know, it's hard to have just say no work when you have adults out there saying, well, it's just not going to work to just say no. So, anyway, I got to keep moving
okay.
on, and you're welcome to call back in on the other ones, okay?
Okay, I will.
Thanks so much, Ed. 479-1080, 477-1340. Ed's just off. We're going to take Carl real quick, and then we're going to move on to the next initiative, unless he wants to comment on that one. Carl, welcome to the Saturday special.
Hey, thanks for keeping things going at a good pace.
Well, you know, it's
like hurting us kittens, right? Anyway, I'm an educator. I've worked with junior high and now college. And you know what? When you're doing things with young people, you have to have a parental release for medical treatment for anything.
For anything.
Except abortion.
Yeah, I know.
Is there something really crazy about that? I mean, does that, like, break through somebody's strange logic? You know, you get a cut, oh, you got to get released, call the parent or have something written. You want to kill the baby? No problem.
Yeah, that's always bothered me, is somehow inconsistent that, you know, there's some earth-shattering difference between abortion. You can't, you know, you can prescribe all the drugs, you can't give them any of the drugs, excuse me, but when it comes to abortion, you're going to whisk them off.
Yeah, anyway, that's just... I want to get that little logical opening up your mind kind of a thing, you know?
Good, good. Hey, I'm going to hold you on the air for a second, Carl, because we're just going to, that's a great segue into Proposition 74, public school teachers waiting period for permanent status. Are you affected by that?
I'm not, because I'm teaching in college now.
Okay, are you tenured?
I'm not.
Well, are you worried about tenure?
No.
Or do you enjoy, are you a lecturer and you enjoy that?
I'm an adjunct professor.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Then you would probably not have a big position on this, and I'll move on to 74.
Thanks
so much, Carl. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're going to move on to 74, and it's the public school teachers waiting period for permanent status dismissal initiative statute. So it increases the length of time required before a teacher may become a permanent employee from 2 complete consecutive school years to 5 complete consecutive school years. Billy, if you really want to talk about 73 real quick, call me back. We'll take you. I'll finish saying what 74 is about. We'll get it on the table, and then I'll hear your comments on abortions, because I had a call from Bill, and it may have been Billy that dropped off. The other thing about 74 is it, in fact, makes it easier to let bad teachers go. Instead, it only requires 2 consecutive negative evaluations. See, I can tell by the names who they are, because I put that out there and it rang right away. And I find 74 very interesting. A lot of the forums, as soon as the name comes up, we'll take this. A lot of the forums, the point that's come up is that K through 12 teachers do not get tenure. Do not get tenure. What they get is permanent employment status. Is that you, Bill? Billy?
Yes.
Yes. Are you going to walk those little teenagers to the courts?
Well, I feel like the bottom line is that the
fallout from the sexual revolution has spilled over into our society today to a point where we accept the sexual act as commonplace, and it's something everybody has a right to. And I believe that there's a context that was meant to be put into, and that's within the family and marriage relationship. The kids today experimenting with the concepts, fallout from Clinton and all of that type of behavior is rampant, even in our junior high schools today. The bottom line, I think, is parents have been disrespected
by the system.
Exactly. They've taken away parental rights and almost abrogated them more and more to the state. We have so many more parents in the workforce today that parents are taken out of the home. If husbands and fathers could earn a decent wage, mothers could stay home and still be the formers of the children and bringing more of the Judeo-Christian values back into the family. We've lost a lot of that. Our kids have been inundated in sexuality up to their eyeballs, and it's pretty hard not to get into that. My mom used to say that if you live in the gutter, you're going to get dirty.
Do you think, just listening to you, I'll just throw this out there, and then like I say, I want to move on to 74, is that it seems to be in part the public attitude we have right now actually has encouraged children, our youth, as they grow up, to be irresponsible, because it just says, well, how, you just can't do it.
No,
you know, do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Is that as adults, we've acquiesced and just says, oh, it's impossible. You shouldn't even try. You shouldn't even worry about it anymore. That's kind of an exaggerated extension, but it's like that. Is, oh, well.
There's an old adage that says that if for evil to succeed, all that has to happen is that good men do nothing.
And I think we've gotten there. Bill, thanks so much. I'm going to move on to the next proposition, okay? Bill, we lost him there. Okay, on 74, this has been a hot one. I talked about this in detail the other day. The first, there's a couple different arguments against 74. 74 actually, like as I said, changes the waiting period to get permanent employment status. And we need to use that term accurately like that, because that's it. One of the objections is it's tenure in universities, which is permanent employment status. But if you use the word tenure with respect to 74 and you discuss this issue with the teachers or the No on 74 group, they will quickly let you know that it's that K through 12 doesn't have tenure. What they have is, in fact, permanent employment status. So they want to make that distinction that permanent employment status is different than tenure. The argument is that all permanent employment status gives the teacher is a right to a hearing if they're going to be let go and or fired. So if it has nothing to do other than a right to hearing, why call it permanent employment status? And the reason it's called permanent employment status is if you read the legislative analyst's review and approach to 74, is basically currently if a teacher is up for being let go for, in fact, not being a qualified teacher, not or for whatever, it's a very lengthy, difficult process. It's like a 12-step process. And in fact, when I did my show yesterday, I talked about this particular initiative in quite some detail. I would say that letting go of a teacher right now that's attained permanent employment status is kind of akin to the death penalty in that it's almost impossible to do. Yes, there are provisions for getting rid of bad teachers currently, but it is not at all a simple, straightforward process. So in Proposition 74, they would take the waiting period, which is currently, as I said, 2 years right now for permanent employment status, and it would be, in fact, moved from 2 years to 5 years. Now, the second thing that it would do is it would allow the school board, in fact, to let go of an employee if they had two negative consecutive evaluations. So one of the arguments about this is, well, California, there's only two other states in the union that require 5 years. And interestingly enough, they're Indiana and Missouri, and I don't know what else is entailed in Indiana and Missouri in their five-year waiting period. Most of the states have 3 years, okay? And then there again, as I said, that a school teacher could be let go for two consecutive negative evaluations. Now, I find that interesting. There's a couple things going on there. Let's look at education, what it takes to become a teacher, because that was brought up in a forum the other night. In that forum, it was brought up, well, let's look at what it takes to become a teacher. First, you got 4 years of college, then you got a year and a half, and then you got 2 years. I'm sitting there. I went home after that forum. I thought, talk about a big smokescreen. Any professional degree, any professional training you get, if you're going to be a doctor, it requires 4 years of college. If you're going to be an engineer, a chemist, they're all 4 years of college. So that's the starting base. Everyone has to go through that. It would be like if you're in construction saying, well, let's look at what it takes to be in construction, or a contractor, you got to go through 8 years of elementary school and 4 years of high school and like that. Kind of elementary and high school are required for everyone. So let's throw that out. When we throw that out, what it takes to become a teacher fundamentally is 1.5 years of advanced training. Then if you, in fact, have a two-year waiting period, you have permanent employment status. So 18, 4 years, 22, okay, 23 and a half. By the time you're 25 and a half, you get full-time employment status. Is it really all that unreasonable to require someone to wait an additional 3 years for a permanent employment status? Let's go ahead and...
Hey, Vernon.
Yes.
Got a comment back here. I just recently graduated high school in 2003.
Yes.
I think there's a small loophole in that whole system, in that I think you can get a teaching job right out of college as long as you have a plan to complete your further education within those 2 years.
You actually do, and I don't have the details of that in front of me. I should look it up. Maybe I'll do one of my normal shows on Friday on that. Actually, it was in the Sentinel last week, I believe it was. And that is, there is a plan to, it's kind of on-the-job training learning, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
So are you going to be a teacher? Let me ask you first of all.
I that is one of my dreams, is to become a teacher of most likely mathematics. But being a student currently, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest influences in my life are the teachers I have. And thank God I'm in college. I can choose my teachers. I can go online, look up a teacher, and there are, you know, if you're a teacher, you're online, and you got ratings on your name from a lot of students that you've had. But in high school, you go to school your first day, you get handed your schedule, and you're pretty much stuck with what you've got. And I personally don't think that I was very well educated in high school because of the lack of teacher quality.
Well, and so you think that some of them should have been let go and replaced with someone else?
Oh, yes.
Well, Steve, I'm amazed, like I say, for a lifetime guarantee, fundamentally, of employment. I don't think that 5 years is excessive, and I want to throw one other thing out here, is one of the things I have, in fact, been amazed by on this particular proposition is the fact that it's the Board of Trustees that can let that determine whether the teachers should be let go. And one of the things that was asked at one of the seminars, one of the forums, was in fact if the teachers distrusted the Board of Trustees. Okay, and I want to play real quickly. I have a piece here that I had the other day and used, and tell me if you can what this answer is real quickly. Hang on.
Sounds like the opponent to 74 is suspicious of and does not trust the school board members elected by the parents of the students. Any comments, Patty?
Actually, I've seen some pretty egregious cases where evaluations were truly suspicious, and where excellent teachers have been dismissed absolutely without cause because of literally the principal wanted to hire a relative. I mean, these things do happen. And board members generally, they hire the superintendent. They generally follow the advice of the superintendent, who generally takes the word of his principals, and they're all involved in it together. And I think more often than you may realize, the union is involved in actually moving incompetent teachers out. None of it.
Can you tell me what her answer was?
Well, I'm not so sure about her answer, but I definitely know what's going on in that room. My sophomore year in high school, I had a great teacher who ended up getting fired because four students that weren't doing too well grade-wise in their class, two of which had parents on the board, and the other two of which were close friends of those parents, and they had the power, and they just got rid of the teachers that didn't, you know, that had hard classes or challenging classes.
Well, that's a good. The bottom line, the answer really is a long-winded no.
Mm-hmm.
The question was, is do you trust the board that's elected by the public?
No.
And the long-winded answer is all about teachers of the boards left go because they listen to the superintendent and on and on and on. That's a no. That's the bottom line, is it's a no. The other, but I'm actually curious as to why teachers, when you get in that position, would have two negative evaluations. So I'm going to move on. Does that answer your question there? Hello, Steve?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So anyway, I'm going to take some other callers here in a second if I've answered your question. If not, tell me quickly.
Definitely.
Thanks. And jump in anytime. We're going to go to Steve here in Salinas. Steve.
Hey, Vernon.
Yes.
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you. Thanks for listening to the special.
Hey, I hate to tell you, but the merits of these propositions have nothing to do whether they're going to pass or not, or the non-merits.
But you know, Steve, I won't give up anyway.
Hey, Big Goonie, the governor, is the kiss of death. Whatever Big Goonie is backing is going to fail. That's just the handwriting on the wall, brother.
Well, how come?
Because he's an idiot. Thank you, Vernon.
Well, Steve, don't go yet.
All right.
Don't go yet. Just because he's an idiot, if the prop... By the way, people seem to forget that he didn't put him on the ballot. He may support them. But you can't force someone to sign an initiative. Will you agree with me there?
I don't care how they got on, and some of them may be meritorious. However, when you have somebody like him backing them, look at his poll. Look at his poll rating.
Okay, well, I'll buy that. But you know what, Steve? Is that to not pass a good initiative because you hate the governor is kind of stupid, but that's okay.
Well, that's what's going to happen. That's the way the public is. Buddy.
Well, I think you and I have a standing bet or something, didn't we, of 1,000 pennies?
You didn't bet me.
Or, oh, that, you know why I didn't bet you?
Why?
Because you were supposed to give me odds.
I gave you 10-1.
10-1, okay, so.
All five of them.
Translate how much they have to lose by.
Oh, no, we're not going to get into that.
Steve, anything else?
You didn't go to Vegas to go to school, did you?
No.
Okay, buddy, we'll see you.
Thanks so much. 479-1080, 477-1340. So right now we're talking about Proposition 74, the gist of 74, the basic of 74. It changes current law from the fact that after 2 years you get permanent employment status in K-1 through 12, and it changes what's required to let a teacher go and puts it back in the hands of school board members instead of this long, lengthy process. Margaret.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, first of all, I really have a problem with any teacher having tenure, a permanent job, because everybody else in this country, everybody else in the world has to perform up to their whatever their job description says. Originally, the tenure was put in, I believe, because of the Darwinian situation. It wasn't supposed to be set aside, and everybody else is allowed to be fired, but not the teachers. I'm a retired teacher myself. I've been through a lot of the systems, so I don't really believe in tenure to begin with.
You know, Margaret, let me ask you a question, okay? Before you became a teacher, did you ever work anyplace else in the job force?
Oh, yes. I started off way back in New Jersey picking tomatoes. I've been in the factory, and I've worked in offices. I've worked in personnel. I've had a lot of jobs. I've also been in business for myself. So
let me ask you a question. When is an employee at their best? I might not have asked that right, so I'll just answer the rhetorical question.
Well, first of all, if they're qualified for their job, they work very well. And then if the work environment is conducive to supporting their job, they work very well.
Well, I actually was going to, my point was, is most people that get employed by someone are at their best when they're first employed because they're most worried about losing their job. When there's kind of a hammer over your head and your job's not guaranteed, you tend to try a little bit harder to make sure that you don't get fired. Do you
well, let me ask you, is your job guaranteed?
Well, mine is because I'm self-employed, but I...
But you guarantee yourself.
Yes, yes.
You take responsibility for your actions. And another issue that I have is that the CTA is the California Teachers Association, but in essence it's the California Teachers Union. And I have a real problem with the CTA putting themselves out as the face of most teachers. They're not. They're the face of the union. And we have some wonderful teachers who work very, very hard and purport themselves out as a some kind of an image for their students and a model for their students. But we have a huge amount of teachers that come in and look like they just came in from the beach.
Well, that I happen to know a young man I've known for years that recently joined a health club, and his health trainer there said that she was going to quit her job and go for a teaching credential because all her friends that were teachers had guaranteed employment, made lots of money, and didn't work very hard.
And that's the union. That's not the...
No, I know. By the way, I'm glad you brought that up, Margaret. I am not trying to cast an aspersion or a cloud over teachers, because I think there are a lot of good teachers in the system. And one of the things I've always felt, too, is truly good, competent teachers, for the most part, I don't believe are really worried about their jobs and worry about the evaluations.
No, and they work long, hard hours, and during the summertime they get a chance to sit back and relax and take classes if they want to, because most people who are in teaching or academic, that is what they love to do most of all, is to take classes.
Well, you know, Margaret, we heard it first here. You are a retired teacher, I take it?
Yes.
And you are in favor of Prop 74.
Yes, and one more comment.
Yes.
Governor Schwarzenegger is only doing what myself and a lot of other voters put him in office to do. And it's a shame that now that he's doing the things that he said he would do, people are castigating him.
Well, you know, it's not people. If you read who is, as they say, follow the money, you read who's putting all these ads on television, it's not the people. It's the teachers' union, the teachers' unions, the SEIUs, all the public employee unions. That's who are running these ads. And for the most part, I've never seen such a bunch of inaccurate ads loaded with lies.
That's right. We could go on and on for about 12 hours talking about all the inaccuracies that have been published, not only on our voting pamphlet, but on the TV, etc. I don't put any rationale into them at all.
Well, get your neighbors and friends and people out there to vote, Margaret. And thanks for the call.
Bye.
You have a good day. Keep listening, and you're welcome to call back. Let's see, next caller, Soquel Bob, and then I got rapid fire here. Bob.
Hello, Vernon.
Yes.
Well, there's several things that you brought up which need some kind of a measured response. First of all, the idea that 2 years is enough, or 5 years is okay for permanency on the part of teachers in the first place. If a teacher is not in good stead with his principal, if there's a personality clash, he could very well be subject to political influence. A good teacher, I've seen it happen, a good teacher can get his permanency turned down even though he's worked in the classroom, done his homework himself, and prepared for his classes.
Bob, let me ask you a quick question.
And I might ask you a question when you're finished asking.
Sure, absolutely. The question is a very simple one. Is that the rule or the exception?
I can't crunch numbers like you have, and I can't answer that question. I'm not trying to evade it, but I can assure you that it does happen. Now, in my experience, and you probably know, I'm both a teacher. I was a teacher for 30 years, and I've been a businessman for 20 years. So I've been in both the public and the private sector. You probably know that about me.
Yes.
And so I can honestly say that while I was a teacher, in the 30 years that I've been teaching, and this is my own personal experience, and I realize you can't use your own experiences all the time.
But you
I only ran into two bad teachers, really bad teachers. And what they did with those two bad teachers is they changed their assignments so it wasn't vital to the education of the students. In one case, the teacher was eased out. The other case, they changed his assignment. You want to respond to that?
So what they did is they just moved him into a place where he could do no harm, and we paid him for being incompetent.
Well, they did that because he was... I can't...
No, but that's basically what you...
I can tell you this.
Bob. I will let you...
Let me respond to that. What they did...
That wasn't a question, but you can.
Where they put him in a place where he could do no harm. I can't go into detail on that because it would involve personalities.
No, I understand. So, Bob, let me make this... All I'm saying is basically what you said is rather than getting rid of a teacher that was a bad teacher, they moved him into a place where he could do no harm, continued to employ him, and when he retired, he would have gotten his teacher's retirement benefits, even though he probably should have been out of the teaching position.
What I said originally, and bear this in mind, that he is the exception.
I understand that. I'm just...
In my experience. And these things happen because you're going to get the human element in any position and in any kind of vocation that you're talking about.
So I'm going to answer Bob's question. The answer was yes. Okay.
Can I answer to the...
Can I
respond to what the last caller said?
Yes.
She talks about the teachers' union. The teacher, and she mentioned a CTA. There are two teachers' unions and one... And up to the present time, they've been at loggerheads of one another. The AFT, which is up to the present time, has been part of the AFL-CIO, and the CTA. They don't always agree. I concede the point that they agree on this because they feel that probably 2 years isn't enough to have a proper evaluation. I mean, excuse me, 2 years is enough. Five years is too long, and there are too many changes in 5 years that could affect a teacher's welfare and employment. As far as the teachers' unions being involved, it's about time the teachers' union did get involved. For a long time, teachers weren't organized, and I might point out that teachers are American citizens. They have a right to organize for pay.
Bob, we got about 20 seconds in this first hour. So
I could go on and on about this based upon my experience, and I want to stress that as a businessman, I want to have good teachers in the system as much as you do.
I'm going to put you on hold, Bob, because we are out of time. You're listening to KSO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watson.
And Vernon.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but... I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Okay, welcome back to the second hour of the Saturday special. We are discussing the propositions on the ballot. We've gone at a snail's pace so far. We're only up to the second one, but we'll kick up the pace here. The second one, 74, has to do with changing the waiting period for permanent employment status for teachers and changing what's required to let teachers go. So I have rapid fire on the air here, and I'm going to start dodging some bullets. Hello?
Vernon.
Yes.
I'm not firing at you. This is friendly fire.
Yeah. Okay. So it's out. Richard, it's outbound, right? Outgoing, not incoming.
Exactly.
Well, it says rapid fire. You know what? You got to be ready for both, don't you?
Exactly.
You need to be able to, you know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to put your finger on the trigger, and know when to hold off, and know when to duck.
All those cliches.
Go ahead.
I mean, some of those you said, I could really respond with some good ones that we just can't use on the radio.
I got to be careful when I talk to you. I just could be taken behind the woodshed. Go ahead.
Yeah, listen, you've only done two in the first hour.
I know.
What makes you think you're going to get through all eight of them?
Because I'm going to speed it up. The only ones I really care about, huh?
That's why I called up to do this rapid fire, and I figure I'll call up, I'll give you my picks. If you don't like any one of them, you can question them.
Okay, go.
All right?
Go.
73, yes. 74, yes. So this is how I already voted, folks.
Yes. 75.
Right, I did vote yes. 75 yes.
76.
Yes.
77.
Yes.
78.
No.
79.
No.
80.
Yes.
That's it.
That's it, man. I mean, do you agree with any of those or not?
I agree with all of them. The only one I'm not, that I haven't read as thoroughly as I should is 80.
80?
Yeah, that's the...
Well, you want control over it, or you want the government to have control over it, or the state to have control over it, or these ISOs to have control over it, or Ken Lay? I'll see you, man.
Thanks so much, Richard. Well, see, there you have it all. 73, parental notification, yes. 74, yeah, teacher waiting period, yes, by Richard. 75, which is the unions. Actually, we have dealt with the teachers. You know, if no one wants to talk about that, we'll move on to the next one, which is public employee unions. And 75 says that, in fact, what you need to do is that if you want to allow your money to be used for campaign purposes, very simply, it requires an affirmative on your behalf to the unions. Shortest proposition on the ballot in terms of the proposed text, exactly one page, and basically what it says is, since if you're in a union, we'll read the first thing, no public employee labor organization may use or obtain any portion of dues, agency shop fees, or other fees paid by members of the labor organization or individuals who are not members through payroll deductions or directly for disbursement to a committee as defined in Subdivision A, those are political action committees, except upon the written consent of the member or individual who is not a member received within the previous 12 months. In other words, you have to affirmatively say if you want your money to be used for political purposes. Right now, they don't have to do that. There are ways to opt out. Maybe that's what this call is. But the rapid fires that you get on the news media is, in fact, that this is putting political restrictions on unions. No. It's allowing a person in a union to say whether they, in fact, want to allow their money to be used for political campaigns. And actually, there's a place in there where it says how much. I find this one interesting because one of the big things that's raised about it is, in fact, well, it's going to be so cumbersome, it's going to take up all our time. In this day and age of computers, you could actually make the form with a little scratch in the box, you know, thousands, hundreds, tens, and cents columns, 1 through 10, and you mark a pencil in there, and it's done with a card reader. 479-1080, 477-1340. Westside Al, you're on the air.
Hey, Vern.
Yes.
This Prop 75 is a great illustration of the disconnect between the rank and file and the union bosses, because in states where this paycheck protection has been enacted, for example, in Washington and Utah, Washington being a case of it being an initiative process, just like it is here, Utah, the legislature took it on themselves to put it into law. And interestingly enough, in Utah, before that law was passed in 2001, 69% of the union members let their bosses take their money from them. It dropped to 6.9% after the law was passed. Now, it's since gone up to 20%. And I suspect that's for two reasons. Number one, the bosses have become a little bit more sensitive about what they do with the money and perhaps garnered a little bit more membership support by that. And that, the other is the mechanism. The contribution that the employee voluntarily wants to give is no longer taken from his paycheck. It's taken from a direct withdrawal from his either credit union or bank account, and that may make it easier for the union member to opt out just by letting his bank know to cancel that transaction. So there you go on that. Now, in Washington State, the participation dropped to 15% after a Paycheck Protection Act was passed. That means 85% and 93%, respectively, in those two states, opted out when they were given the opportunity to do so. Tells me that these ads that the union leaders are putting out are just plain old capital B, capital S.
Lies.
Yeah, lies, okay.
They're lies. I mean, remember I read that opening part in the Sentinel about Proposition 76, where they said, ignore the ads, they're just lies, we don't like to use that term, it's overused. They're just lies. Fact of the matter is what this does is gives union members an opportunity, it stops unions from using union dues money automatically. We used to have in this county, in the state of California, the maintenance assessment district. And what that was is, for those of you that don't remember it, is when they wanted to pass a maintenance assessment district to put partial taxes on the on your parcels, is you automatically start out in favor of them. You're always in favor of them unless you actively sent in a piece of paper that says, no, I don't want it.
Yeah, I know. I'm very familiar with that. Do you remember the street lighting benefit assessment district that they tried to run by us here in Santa Cruz?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Me and our mutual acquaintance, Doug Silvera, took to the streets on that one and got enough people to send in their written no that the damn thing went down to defeat.
Well, and the thing is we have the same thing going on here.
Exactly.
Is that we're going to get an affirmative statement by union members if they want their money spent, you know, politically. And the only way that can hurt the unions is if people don't want their money to be spent politically.
Well, here's the situation, Vernon. If the union bosses think they've got a good slate of candidates or a good list of causes that they want their membership to contribute to, they should be able to sell the package. If they can't sell the package, that means the union members have the option of not participating. So it's as simple as that. I mean, I'm always in favor of giving people more options in life on any subject you want, whether it's your grocery store or the way they take the money out of your check, you know?
Well, I agree, and a couple other quick ones on this union thing is, like I say, their arguments don't add up. One of the problems with public, some of the mantras going around is that private corporations spend 24-1. So what? I mean, that's a non sequitur in my book. I don't know what that has to do with the price of tea in China, right?
Yeah, and doesn't have a damn thing to do with it. And if you own stock in a company that you don't think is doing the right thing,
pull out. We've heard that one. The other thing about public employee unions as opposed to corporations is public employee unions rally behind political candidates that vote on their salaries, which come out of the public pocket.
Yeah, it's a real nice case of one hand washing the other, you know. It's a little too cozy by half for me to see the unions negotiating with the very people that are going to give them the raises, and it's just a very unhealthy situation. And I think this this 75 is going to do the job at least partly. And there was one other thing I wanted to say, but I forgot it, Vernon. So I'll let you move on.
Well, Al, thanks for calling in, and thanks for the stats. I wanted to get to that on unions opting out, and you did it for me brilliantly. I appreciate it so much.
Just there to help.
You always do. Thanks so much.
Adios.
Bye-bye. 479-1080-477-1340. Yeah, these comparisons between private sector and public sector, in fact, I find interesting. And like I say, when it comes to public sector unions, they support candidates who they demand that they say that they won't do anything to undermine the union. And these public entities, the elected officials, boards of supervisors, and things like that, vote on salaries. There's a conflict of interest here. Okay, we're going to move on now to Proposition 76. And that's the one the Sentinel was talking about. And that is a total remake. We're going to revamp the budgetary process in the state of California. And they hate this one. They literally hate this one. Basically, what Proposition 76 does is it changes the way we determine our spending cap in the state of California. And instead of using the old spending caps, which the legislative analysts have said we've never even reached, it uses an average of the previous 3 years to determine what the spending cap will be for the legislature. Now, our illustrious John Laird made a comment at one point in time, I've seen him in forums, that this makes no sense because you could still increase spending on during economic times when revenues are going down. Well, that's a little bit of a sleight of hand, folks, given the fact that they can still do that anyway. And as the legislative analyst says, they have never exceeded the current spending cap. So at least the new Proposition 76 would lower those spending caps so they wouldn't spend as much. I'm absolutely fascinated by this because the fact of the matter is California cannot continue to afford the generous overexpenditure by the legislature. Last year's budget was $99 billion. Going to give you a quick economics lesson. This year's budget turned out to be $119 billion, 19% increase in 1 year. You can't keep spending at that rate without going in the hole. The second thing it says is if there are surpluses, in years that there are surpluses, those surpluses will, in fact, be put aside. They will be saved. Anything the state takes in excess of what has been allocated for spending gets put aside and saved for a rainy day. Okay, so that sounds like good common economic sense. And the third component of this package is, in fact, in times of budgetary, not even budgetary crisis, in times of revenue crisis where you don't have money coming in, where you thought more was coming in that actually did come in, what you in fact have to do is tighten your belt. You know, there's no one in the private sector that doesn't have to do that. 479-1080, 477-1340. If you anticipate Christmas bonus, they used to give Christmas bonuses. If you anticipated a Christmas bonus and you didn't get one because the company was not doing good and you had planned on buying something new with that money, you just would have to not do it. And here is where the sleight of hand comes in, is they talk about it giving this governor sweeping powers. Well, every governor would have the powers. Is what the actual text of the proposition says, is that the legislature has the first chance to rectify the problem. So if there's an emergency fiscal crisis in the state of California, the governor calls the legislature, and it's their job to, in fact, deal with it. The governor only steps in if the legislature fails to deal with it. And that is an absolutely appropriate provision given the fact that legislatures are dependent on their popularity for their job. And as such, they never want to tell people, their constituents, the people that vote for them, those special interests that have their hand out for government monies, is that we can't do it. 479-1080, 477-1340. So, it turns out, at one of the public forums that was held in San Lorenzo Valley, the union opponent to 76 was going on and on, was asked a question. If they regularly overspent the amount of money they took in every year, the answer to that question was no, but we had to nix 76 as part of nix the six, because it could in fact affect public employee retirement benefits and salary increases. So if there's anyone out there that wants to ask me any question about 76, you're more than welcome to do that. 479-1080, 477-1340. Fax me at 475-2967. It's a yes on 76, in my humble opinion, and I'm in opposition to the union. So if you have any comment on that, that's fine. You know, it's a good time for the commercial break. After that, we'll come back and wrap up 76 and move on to 77. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. You're listening to the Saturday Special, where we are discussing the propositions that will be on the November 8th special election ballot.
Here's the bad news. Credit card companies are charging up to 22% interest these days. Now the good news. If you're a homeowner, there's a good chance that you can save a lot of money on credit card debt with a tax-deductible mortgage loan, even if your credit rating is low. Hi, I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland. We would love to help you save money by consolidating credit card debt with a new home mortgage. Please call us at Pacific Inland today, 475-2600. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. .NET specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, .NET has a solution to fit your needs. .NET offers server colocation and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. .NET understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call .NET today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. .NET?
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Too much confusion. Can't get no relief. What can I say? 479-1080, 477-1340. It is 24 past the hour. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. And we are talking about the ballot propositions. We are up to 76, which is a revision in the way the budget is constrained. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. You can't continue to spend what you don't have. And I have two callers on the line. We're going to get to them. And then we'll move forward to 77, 78, 79. I'm not really... I'll talk a little bit about those, but we're going to wind up the show with measures A and B and with a commentary from Kay's Whirling. So we'll get into that about a quarter till 12 or so. So we got this measure, one other, some quick comments on 78, 79, and then we'll spend the last part of the show dealing with measures A and measure B. I think this is Billy. Is this Billy in Capitola?
Vernon Squared.
Yes.
How you doing?
Yes, I lost an exponent. I lost an exponentiation.
But just for today.
Well, that's okay. Vernon Squared times Vernon is still Vernon Cubed.
Vernon.
Billy, Billy.
I'm not that frustrated with you that I need the third Vernon.
Oh, okay.
How are you today?
Well, you could go to Cardiff V, too. Vernon. By
no,
the way, as
I
a quick,
can't go that far.
As a side note, is do you ever watch Saturday Night Live?
Of course.
Anyway, it's hilarious to me because you know how they originally you had a razor and then they came out with the two blades and stuff?
Sure.
Saturday Night Live did a little skit on that one night and went from the 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 and it was 15. You know, you always got to get another blade in there. And I finally saw my razor the other day with 4 blades.
It's not a joke anymore.
It's not a joke. I can hardly wait. There will be one with a 5th blade, and this parody will come
through. And now they have a battery in them, and they vibrate or do something crazy?
Oh, that could be dangerous.
Yeah, I won't go near that stuff.
Yes.
I'm too old to change now. Vernon, I just wanted to talk about the propositions for a minute with you.
Yes. Coming from you, that means you want to set me straight.
No, actually, I just want to share my opinion.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say that I'm right and you're wrong. How about that?
That's a... I couldn't ask for more.
There you go. So to begin with, the first thing I want to say is, of course, that none of these things should be voted on now. We didn't need this election. We are bankrupt, and to spend all this money is an example of the hubris, egomaniacal, out-of-controlness of our governor.
Okay, can we stay on point then? Because the first thing I got to say is, by law, if something qualifies for the ballot through the initiative process, elections must be held within a certain period of time. Now, you can argue that the petition drive shouldn't have been held to get them on the ballot.
Okay, I'll argue that.
Okay. Are we there? The second thing I want to deal with is the tremendous cost of this election with respect to this what we spend in the state. It's peanuts. It doesn't even hit the scale.
That attitude is exactly the attitude people constantly accuse liberals of having.
No, but
$60 million is not peanuts.
Well, let's put it in perspective, because I think it comes out to about the equivalent of 2 to 3 cents per $10,000.
$60 million is $60 million. You can play all the games. You know, this is what you do, Vernon. You're playing games now with numbers. It's $60 million.
No, I'm telling you
the truth.
Would
you like to have $60 million? Would you like to?
No, I would, but it's proportion to scale, Billy. And I want to at least keep you intelligent in your speech, because you know, even in this great culture, I've been in grocery stores where I've been 2 cents short on like a $15 purchase.
And they let you slide.
And they let you slide because the 2 cents is not that it's not important. I have actually gone back to stores. I went into store, ate a bag of chips when walking through one day, and the bag was empty, folded up in my pocket, put it in my pocket, forgot I had it. And I actually went back to the store and paid them their 79 cents. It took me a month to get back there.
Last thing I want to say about it is,
yes,
I would have loved if the same $60 million could have been split among our best teachers.
Oh, I would too. They'd all get about a 3 cent raise.
Wrong, but enough said.
That's absolutely not true.
Now let's talk about, you know, the Republicans have figured out how to get elected. And what they do is they make sure that their base comes out. So they give them some really sort of disgusting red meat issue that they can lie, cheat, and steal from the rest of us. And that's what they've gotten in this, kids have to tell their parents fake, thing. Right?
Okay, I'm gonna keep on, go ahead.
Well,
I don't buy your premise. That's a
you don't think that floor. the wording is aggressively suspicious on this particular? There's no talk about fetuses, is there?
No, it's about. I know you, that just chills you to the bone that we're going to define something as an unborn child. But what does an unborn fetus turn out to be? A frog, a growing frog when it's birthed or something?
Excuse me.
Well, you know, I don't see anything to do.
Here's what you don't seem to understand, and
that's just enlightening.
That fascists don't quite get, and that is that at what point do you decide you're taking over the body of a woman? When is that fascist moment exactly?
Well, this is not taking over a woman's body.
If you insist a woman goes to term, you're taking over her body, haven't you?
That's not what it says. It doesn't prevent abortion, number one. You're wrong there, Billy, and number two, it just says...
I didn't say it prevents abortion. I'm talking about a piece of something that is a stalking horse, that is a lie, that is a sneaky way of doing things that aren't being done straight ahead.
I understand the assertion. I reject. I don't think that you've successfully defended it, okay? So go on.
So you don't think that it's ever appropriate for a child not to have to tell his parents about...
Well, there are provisions that they don't have to, and that's where I say that if people like you and Planned Parenthood care so much, you help them avail themselves of those provisions.
No. The issue is whether or not they should have to tell their parents in every case. And obviously, in the cases they don't think they should tell their parents, one must ask, what's the situation there? And as you and I know...
Well, you know, Billy, the other part, though, is... In this
an easy example out of today's history would be taking some of these crazy Islamic fascists and the way they treat their women. You don't want to go have your parents or your brother kill you, which is what happens in a lot of these situations.
But you know what?
Isn't that good enough for you?
Well, you know, the minute that the young lady goes before the courts and says...
Courts? Why should a little girl have to go to courts? What are you, nuts? You know, a little girl's not going to feel comfortable going to courts. Yeah, courts. Yeah, she's got to go stand before a court. Come on. You're not being honest and realistic. Why don't you make it easy for people to do hard things that they need to do? And ultimately, why are we still talking about this? How come these people haven't started to back off, haven't learned to mind their own business? And ask yourself this, Vernon, or I'll ask you this. What punishment do you, Vernon, want to see happen to a woman who has an abortion after abortion's illegal? You want to kill her? Put her in jail?
You done?
Drown her and the doctors that did it?
You done?
Or, no, I'm almost done. Or is it possible that something like abortion, something like a woman's right, is not something that any politician, and a politician, by the way, is defined as a sleazy elected official who never votes honestly but votes what will get him reelected, shouldn't that be something that politicians don't vote on? Isn't John Danforth, the Republican, right when he says that the takeover by the Christian conservatives has destroyed this country and destroyed the Republican Party? Now I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I did listen. I have listened to my fans in the past that said that when someone's on a roll with a bunch of nonsense,
let them go. Let them dig themselves a hole.
Let them go. a lot of things in life are tough. Part of life's learning lessons is to deal with tough things growing up. You can have representatives take you to the court, Billy, if some father's abusing their daughter, and that's why it resulted in an abortion in the pregnancy. I want that father prosecuted. That's certainly one way to bring it out.
But, Bert, don't you think that in the real world...
And then I need to accept your underlying presupposition without having Dan Forth's words in front of me that what you've told me is right and accurate. I'm going to have to move on here.
Coming from a Republican minister, they were really interesting words. Check them out.
Well, I didn't say you're wrong. I just,
no, I know. I'm just saying.
You know, and clearly, I think that the radical either end hurts their own side. You know, I think that the wonderful gal Randy Rhodes does a lot to help middle class America. A lot of people in the vast middle lean more toward the right. Anything else?
No, that's it, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye bye. Ed, you're on the air.
I talk about was it 77, about the governor getting all this power?
76.
76, okay.
Yes. It's not just this governor, it's all future governors.
The point on that is, you know, we have a process. I think it works fairly well, except when we get to the end, when we have to have the two-thirds vote by to pass the budget. And I think this governor has been guilty. He went in and raided the funds from the schools and borrowed from that and then decided he wasn't going to pay it back. So anyhow, this governor I don't think has the right to have that power. And future governors, it's going to be up for grabs whether they have the thing. We have every 4 years to take a crack at a governor. You know, what happens in his first term if he goes in and does this? Plus it negates Prop 98, where which was the school funding proposition that we passed. And I think the basis of it is, so we wanted to save money. What we should do is go in and clean house and figure out where we're spending all our money. And a good portion of it goes into our prisons. And so, you know, you have to get down to the very basic of it of getting the people out of the prisons. And probably that goes back to...
How much you spend on prisons per year, Ed?
Go ahead.
How much you spend on prisons per year?
I don't know, but we've got a hell of a lot of people in there. We pay about $35,000 per head for the people that are in prison. So if I had the facts in front of me, I could figure it out, and it's growing. And a good portion of those people are in there for drugs. And to me, that people that are using drugs, that's between them and their maker. But the people that are distributing it, you know, we've got plenty of people that are distributing drugs. And we get those ads daily on the TV and even on radio. And they're the legal drug makers, and now they've got, they're, in fact, I guess the pharmaceutical, the 79 is their proposition, or 80 is their proposition. I forget which one is which.
78.
Anyhow.
78. Second question, how much of this year's budget went to the schools?
Well, a good portion of it goes to schools.
Now, how much?
I don't have the figures in front of me, but I know that a good portion of our budget in the state goes for schools. And that said, anything that we spend on education is money well spent. It's an investment. That's one of the reasons that our state became so great. We have Silicon Valley. We have all these great institutions, and they produced a lot of people that have done well for California and for the United States as a whole.
Ed, let me ask you a question. Have you read all of the propositions in their entire text, beginning to end?
I have not.
Including 76?
Including 76.
Let me ask you one other question, okay? Can we continue to increase our public spending at the rate of 19% per year without breaking the state?
Well, it depends. It depends on, you know, the factors. How fast is our population? What's the per capita spending? What's the increase on that? You can't take the
nowhere close to 19%
state budget as a whole and say, oh, we've increased it 19%. Well, maybe we've had a 25% increase in population, so our amount of money we spend per capita has gone down.
No, well, I'll tell you, we haven't. Ed, you cannot. I understand what you're saying. Good points, but the fact of the matter is, even with that 19% increase this year, if you read the Mid-County Post, not a publication from the government, They said that by the end of this year, that in fact the legislature thinks that it will still be $4 to $6 billion short. So that would now put it in the realm of a 25% increase. Clearly the population of California has not grown that much. It has not grown from 35 million roughly to 52 million. I'll tell you that and I'll guarantee you that. And there's another term that's crept into the language of the legislatures that I didn't hear several years ago, 5, 10 years ago. It's called structural deficit. And that is the deficit that our obligations to spending that we just can't meet.
Well, so you say.
The last thing I would ask, do you overspend your revenues every year, what you take in?
Well, I have at times. When I bought a house, you could say that I've overspent my revenue by, you know, you go out and buy a $1 million house. How many people have $1 million? That's one of the ways that we, you know, is a figure of accounting. When the government does something, they have to pony up.
You have never had a structural deficit, which would be buying your house where you couldn't make the monthly mortgage payment.
Well, it depends.
I want you to understand.
I say, you know, if the government goes out and spends the, you know, $3 billion on a highway, okay, they spent that in that 1 year. So you've got a deficit of say that, you know, you collected $1 billion in gas tax for that year. You've got a $2 billion deficit.
Yeah, Ed, the numbers won't hold.
What kind of a deficit is that?
Huh?
I said what the structural deficit
would be is the loan that you took out to build the highway that you couldn't even make the payments on. Anyway, Ed, I got other callers up here. Anything else? Thanks for the time.
Take care.
Appreciate
now.
It. 479-1080, 477-1340. That was Ed taking me to task, so to speak. I think he thinks he did that in terms of spending. You cannot keep spending that. This comment on school spending, for what it's worth, I don't know what the prison spending is. It's considerably less. I can't remember what the prison population is. I think it's 2 million. I could calculate that. The budget, school spending in this year's budget was roughly 62 billion out of the budget of 119 billion. You can figure that out. A huge, huge chunk of it. To that end, if in fact money were the problem and we need to pour money into education, the question I have for you is why is New York, in fact, the school that spends, let's see what my charts are. Rank and performance, Vermont is first, they're third in spending. It turns out that North Dakota, second in performance amongst the students, 23rd in spending. The great illustrious state of California whose spending on education has gone up is 48th in performance. 48th in performance. I don't know who's up here. We're just going to take it. Who's on? Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with Bruce from Aptos.
Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, hey, I about jumped out of my car going 60 miles an hour when that guy said anything spent on education in California is well spent. I've been involved in school issues for a few years now, and it would make your skin crawl. The public, they're the skin.
I think that I just lost Bruce. I'll give you a couple seconds here. Lost Bruce on a cell phone. Call back in when you got good reception. Going to go next to, who do we have here?
Hi, this is Jan in SLV.
Hi, Jan.
Hi. Hey, I just want to put my 2 cents in on this. I think that, you know, with all of this Agenda 21 and globalism and everything, the socialists, what's going on is they want to take the control away from the parents. And they want to make teachers more powerful. And they want to give politicians control over the people. And like the governor said, the system is broken, and this is a chance to fix it. I agree with Richard's choices on the proposition.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at what the governor said he was going to do, he had a list of them on the pamphlet. I can't remember exactly what it was going to do. Basically, he was going to stop the bleeding, you know, patch it up, and then rehabilitate the spending and stuff. He's doing all that. All these propositions, in fact, do that, and people hate it. But what we need to do is get out and vote, because you heard Steve earlier, he doesn't believe there's a snowball's chance in the hot place of these things passing.
Well, I hope a lot of them stay home, and so we can go out.
Well, that's their fear. If you listen to their their forums.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid that we're going to show up and their people aren't. By the way, I coined a term that you'll like, an acronym. Mm-hmm. It's called TP. A lot of TP going around today. You know what that stands for?
No.
Talking points.
Oh,
not
yeah.
The stuff on the roll.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say another little spiel here about the need to make our government smaller. You know, when we were talking about the tax issue, it came up that if a government doesn't cost that much, our taxes go down. So the people, this is the most important thing, people. We need to keep control. We need not let control go to our politicians, our government, our teachers. We need to retain control of the government because right now, as I see it, we're on the precipice of government controlling us and everything we do, or us controlling our government.
Jan, I woke up with this vision in the middle of the night. You know how you see political cartoons?
Yeah.
And my vision was a bunch of people, I'll call them the left in this case, with drills drilling holes in the bottom of the boat.
Oh, yeah.
And another one in the back saying, the only problem is you're not bailing fast enough out there.
Yep.
I like that one.
I'm also for a part-time legislature because we don't need to make a lot of new laws. We've got the basic law system down. We've got way too many anyway. A part-time legislature, we just call them in when we need some decisions made. They're going to be in there just cranking out laws to keep their job, you know.
To look good amongst themselves, you know.
Oh, yeah, big deal and power and all that money. That's not what our forefathers envisioned our legislatures doing.
I agree, and in this day of the Internet, I think they could do most of their stuff from their own districts where you could drive down the street, bang on his door, and saying, what the heck are you thinking?
Yeah, and think of how much lower our taxes would be.
Amen,
we've got to take
sister.
Control back. We can't afford to pay for all this crap, and they're taking our power away from us.
You
so.
Betcha. We got to get out and vote. Thanks so much for calling, Jan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Was that Bruce?
Hello?
Yes?
No, this is Veronica from Aptos.
Hi, Veronica. I don't have a list of who's calling in, so I'm taking you all on the fly.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm a former teacher from North Dakota.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say my opinion is that discipline is free.
Discipline is free?
Yes.
Only with the support
of
the parents.
Yeah, that's another problem too.
I know. If you don't those are problems that money can't fix.
Right.
You know, and that's what a lot of people I think don't seem to realize. You can pour all the money you want into the system, and if you don't have the support of the parents, you're in trouble. By the way,
yes.
You want to hear some? You called in because I told you where North Dakota was.
Huh?
Did you hear that, folks? We have a teacher here that's from North Dakota, second in performance in this great United States, 23rd in per student funding.
Mm.
So if there's a correlation, why isn't New York, which happens to be, but I think it's 20, I'll find it on my, New York. 29th in performance is second in spending.
Yeah. It's so refreshing to hear somebody say those things. If you listen to the California Teachers Union, those don't apply whatsoever.
Veronica, you made my day. By the way, your neighbor, South Dakota,
yes.
is 30th in spending, 7th in performance.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, there's all these schools that are most in spending that don't even make the top 10 in performance.
Right.
Thanks so much. Anything else?
Nope. Bye.
Appreciate the call. Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to... Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, actually, I wanted to take my answer up here at the end of the program. Could you go through the propositions again?
Real quick,
when you're done.
Recap them, you mean?
Yeah, recap.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll put you back
Thank
on
you.
Hold.
Thanks.
Okay, my name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. VQ. First... We're going to get into A and B right now. We're going to do it vis-a-vis an editorial by our wonderful and lovely Gay Swirling. Oh, I know I have. Let's stop that and start it again.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Gay Swirling.
The University of California, for the past 30 years, considered among the finest schools in the nation, is no longer a true place of higher learning where the exchange of ideas in all disciplines are encouraged and welcomed. It's evident that many students graduating from public finance schools like the UC system are being shortchanged. UC campuses have become one-sided political factories, graduating large numbers of leftist, brainwashed students, many of whom were taught to hate America, hate our government, hate God, and hate religion, any religion, and they're always offended. How could this happen? I reported some time back that the hiring of teaching personnel in all UC campuses for years has been 85% liberal, 15% conservative, by design. Who gets the blame for the imbalance? The answer is the highly paid elitists at the very top, the Board of Regents, the UC president, plus the various chancellors, all of whom make policy for the entire university, and all of whom know how unjustly they are using their power. Speaking of those top-of-the-heap policymakers, several weeks ago, newspapers reported that the Regents, Etal, presently earning almost $400,000 each per year, claim they needed a raise, so they proposed a creative way to receive raises by asking the public to donate to a special fund. This went over like a lead balloon. Most newspaper editors were offended and responded negatively. These Top Gun elitists, by this callous and crass proposal, added to their joint political biases, have lost respect and credibility as fair leaders of the UC schools. Many already receive enormous salaries, hefty pensions, medical coverage, free homes, and moving allowances. This omission of the valid need to give raises to the poorly paid employees and staff in lower levels of the system magnifies the greed and absence of sensitivity of these elitists. It's an outrage. Are these the leaders we should trust to make decisions for our grown children? Think about it. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Very nice editorial, Kay. We're going to move on to 77 next, which is the plan for redistricting. It's actually beautiful. As you know, in the last census, they gerrymandered the districts, and Proposition 77 comes up with a way to get it more in tune. You actually start with a very large panel of judges. Opposite sides pick the opposite representatives. It's condensed down to a pool of three judges, which determine the districting. And there are some fairly stringent rules, like districts must be adjacent. If you've seen the ads on television of these three judges redistricting and they have a picture that comes out looking like Texas, that's not at all what it's like. That's what it looks like under the current system, where the legislature, in fact, determines the districts. In this case, they must be adjacent, and then their populations have to be within a certain number. It's a very good plan that more equitably proportions the state into electoral districts. Fred Keeley is for it. John Laird, I believe, is in fact against it. In the ultimate analysis, the big problem with the left on this one, or the unions on this one, is they think it will empower Arnold in the next election. But you will vote on the districting plan that they come up with in the next election and everyone thereafter. And every time it needs to be redone, the people actually get to look at the proposed districts and vote on that redistricting plan. I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's definitely a yes on Proposition 77. 78 and 79, I'm not really for either of them. I got two callers coming up on the air here. We'll take them if I can see who they are. If not, I'll just grab them. I think they're both bad for different reasons. If you read 78, It's optional participation by the drug companies, and there are fairly stringent requirements regarding whether you qualify for the plan and the reduction of drug costs. In 78, it's three times the poverty level, family poverty level. In many cases, if you're a single person, it would not make any difference. You wouldn't qualify for it. There again, it is optional. 79 is, in fact, the alternate plan where mandated discounts are there. One of the things that bothers me about that is there's a major definition of profiteering, and I don't want government telling people how to set their profits and stuff. There's a lot about the drug companies I could talk about. I've done medical research. People, I think, underestimate what it costs to bring drugs to the market. Yes, there's a lot of, there are profits in there, but a lot of those profits are from what people want, things called Viagra and everything. Oh, you wanted me to talk at the end. I got one on hold here, had another one come in. So, let's very quickly talk about A and B. In 2001, there were measures C and D on the ballot, and those added parcel taxes to the local county parcels to give additional funds to the high schools and elementary schools. Those are up for renewal. I am really against those for a variety of reasons. You can go to a website that I've put up, www.stop-em.us, where I go into quite a bit of detail of the growth in school funding over the years. I have major problems with A and B and all the comments on school funding at large. First of all, when they passed measures C and D that these will go into effect for, they lied to the people. They said that revenues were down because enrollments were down, but revenues were up. I think that's a travesty. The following year, the school put through another measure on the ballot, measure B, not this B, to keep schools open. They got the money. They got it passed. That's still in effect. And they closed schools anyway. When asked why they closed schools, the reason that was given was, in fact, that the revenues collected from Measure B, not the new B, were insufficient to both keep schools open and fund the new programs that the people approved. There was nothing in that Measure B that promoted new school programs. I thought that was a betrayal of the people. Now they want the public to again renew those measures C and D, which are now the new measure B for the high school, A for the high school, and B for the elementary school. And not only are they renewing these parcel taxes, instead of going for the 4 years, you're not renewing the same tax, you're going for 7. I think there's a reason there. I think there's a reason they didn't go for 8. So they're inching their way toward a permanent tax. I would recommend a no vote on A and B. I don't think that funding in California is the problem. It's in spending. And I say go to www.stop-em. Stands for Stop Those Oppressive Politicians Extorting Money. And that extension is a.us. So we got a caller here. Hello? Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning. Who is this?
I'm Ken.
Ken, thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, have you guys been talking about the bus strike at all?
No, we've been talking about the propositions on the ballot.
Oh, I see. Well, I just would like to see those appointed officials be replaced by somebody who could negotiate with the bus people and get the buses rolling again.
Well, I agree, and I don't know how long that's going to take, Ken, but that's not what I was discussing today. I agree with you. But I don't have bus drivers should go back to work, and or I think they should fire them all and get new bus drivers. Because I think really, it's a subsidized, I think it's interesting that people are striking for more money when they actually make as much as teachers, if you want to do that. They got retirement benefits, and they make roughly twice what the per capita income is, and they're complaining in the real world, as I've said on my Friday shows, they wouldn't have a job because there's not enough money coming in from the enterprise to keep them running. You know what I mean? They're subsidized by us. They wouldn't have a job if the public didn't subsidize them to the tune of 80%.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, with a 0.5% sales tax.
Yes, yes. Anyway, that's about all I can say right now,
right.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Ken about the bus strike. Okay, I'm going to recap these. 73 parental notification prior to an abortion, 48-hour notification, and there is no... They can still have abortions. Proposition 74, and so I yes on that. Proposition 74, in fact, requires the length of time before permanent status to be increased from 2 years to 5 years, and now allows the board of trustees to let a teacher go after two consecutive negative evaluations. I think that that's a good thing. 75 allows union members, or requires union members, to give their written approval before, in fact, their funds can be used for political purposes. I'm definitely in favor of that. Proposition 76 is the first great step for pulling us out of our financial disaster in the state by lowering the rate of growth in government spending. And it is, by the way, for Ed, the proposition allows for the adjustment of the revenues, the increases, to take into account the growth in population and inflation. So it actually accommodates those. Our current caps don't. It also says that in rainy days, when the revenues are good, we put revenues aside. When we're short, then we need to restructure our spending. That's 76. Yes on that. 77 is redistricting. It actually ultimately puts the hands of the redistricting in the hands of the population and public. Right now, it's strictly in the hands of the legislators who, in fact, have gerrymandered their districts. 78 and 79 are two separate drug plans. You read those yourself. 80 has to do with utilities. You read those yourself. And I guess my closing comment here, I'm down to about 20 seconds, is read your voter information pamphlet and use that to make your decision and get out and vote, like it or not. Oh, the last thing I want to say is, This election is a drop in the bucket. It's hardly anything. It's in spending. So you've been listening to the Saturday special. You see MZ next week. I'm out of here. You're listening to KOMY, Watsonville, KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Radio, I'm Ken Duffy. No claim of responsibility yet, but authorities suspect terrorism.